As we approach Christmas, the thoughts and hearts of many turn to or are strengthened in faith. I say it that way because there are those who are devout, while for others, Christmas is one of, really in the year, a handful of times their thoughts turn to religion. But be that as it may, the goal of every church is to connect with people. One of the ways they do this nowadays is with online sermons, and that's not limited to the megachurches, but you might be surprised to learn that many local churches, even yours, have websites and have embraced the potential of streaming their sermons. In the Christian world, while the goal is to grow in God's word and wisdom, is there a consistency in how the message is delivered via the online sermons? My first guest today is with us to present the results of a very interesting study of the online Christian sermon as revealed in the Pew Research Center's report entitled The Digital Pulpit, a Nationwide Analysis of the Online Sermons. He's lead researcher with the Pew Research Center, Dennis Quinn. How are you today, Dennis?
Good. Thank you for having me.
And over at our page, we've linked directly to the Digital Pulpit Report. You can also go to pewresearch.org and read it yourself that way, along with the other very nonpartisan, unbiased surveys that we do, because we've talked often on the show about, you know, various polling organizations have their slants, but Pew plays it down the middle and really gives you an education in the topic that their various reports and surveys are addressing. I want you to set the parameters, Dennis, as far as a sermon. What qualified as a sermon for this study?
That's a great question. So different Christian groups, of course, have different structures to their services. Some would open with, say, a formal prayer, whereas some might have a pastor who hops on stage and as part of the sermon delivers a prayer, right, or leads a prayer. Some might have a formal reading, and others might pause in the middle of the sermon to conduct a reading because they realize it's necessary, right? So that's my way of saying that across the many, many Christian denominations in the country, we did not litigate the precise definition of a sermon that that group uses. Rather, if a congregation posted on their website something that they clearly labeled as a service, sermon, or homily, we included that in the study.
And this, as I've alluded to in the introduction, Dennis did as well, this is focusing on the various aspects of the Christian church because, well, I'm assuming that if you wanted to include synagogues, mosques, any other non-Christian congregations, you'd have a massive survey that would probably get more confusing than educational.
Well, there are a couple of barriers to it, right? So the first is that this is just our first crack at these data, right? This is our first attempt to computationally analyze American sermons. So the first line that we drew was, what is the point at which we can put out a useful study for the public? And this was what we were able to do in a reasonable time frame. The other barriers are more practical. We had a more difficult time collecting non-Christian congregations from Google Maps, which was our actual source of congregations. And there's a point at which you might run into other barriers. For instance, one of the things we analyze is references to the New and Old Testaments. Well, analyzing references to the New Testament in a synagogue or references to the Bible in a Hindu temple, right? It just at a certain point, these things stop adding up.
That also ties into because the study was done around sermons from April 7th to June 1st of 2019, almost 50,000 sermons, by the way. So this is a detailed study. So that obviously includes a period that featured the Easter season and celebration. Was mm-hmm. there a difference? Did that specific Sunday or that specific weekend show any marked difference in how sermons were focused versus the rest of the time in that survey?
It did. But, you know, it occurs to me, could I back up and maybe just tell the listeners exactly what we did for a couple seconds?
Sure.
So I realize we didn't stop and give the premise of the study. So the underlying premise of the study is that we know a fair bit about what Americans think, know, and believe about religion, but less about what they hear. So as you heard alluded, we used computational tools to identify, catalog, and analyze the sermons that American congregations share on their websites as a window into these services. We used these tools to identify about 50,000 sermons from just over 6,000 websites of U.S. congregations. So I wanted to make sure the listeners knew exactly what we were looking at. But back to your question, which is the week of Easter. Is that correct?
Right.
So the study period ran an eight-week period in mid-2019 that included Easter Sunday and a bit of Lent. And you can see that come through in a couple places in the data. The first thing is that we looked at references to books of the New and Old Testaments among sermons. Now, across all Christian groups, the New Testament is more widely cited than the Old. But that is actually even more pronounced during the week of Easter Sunday, when references to the Old Testament drop from 62% of sermons that reference a book of the Old Testament the week before to only 49% that reference the Old Testament during the week of Easter Sunday.
Which you can make that assumption that the weekend leading into Christmas would also feature a greater focus on the New versus the Old Testament as well, for the obvious reason.
Well, so we do see a drop in the Old Testament. One thing that's interesting, though, is references to the New actually stay steady. They hover roughly around 90% of sermons that reference a book, gospel, or epistle of the New Testament across the study period. So we actually don't see a marked increase in references to the New Testament. We do see a decrease in references to the Old. Now, I will emphasize that one thing I can't, at least right now, tell you is what they're referencing within those books, right? I mean, there are, of course, certain books of the New Testament that are more or less relevant at different parts of the year, and you might imagine that they're referencing some books but not others across the study period. That's not something we spoke to in this report.
How about the choice of words they're used in the sermons? Is there more similar between the various factions of the Christian faith, or do they have their own identifying words that they lean on more? One will lean on more than the other.
Well, the answer to your question is yes. So we looked at both common unifying terms across all Christian groups, but also which terms were most disproportionately used by each group. So, for example, across all Christian groups analyzed in the study, that's Catholic, mainline Protestant, evangelical Protestant, and historically Black Protestant, words like love, Jesus, and God were used by more than 95% of every group, right? There are these broad unifying terms. Each group, though, also had certain terms that they use disproportionately relative to others. Now, when I say that, all I mean is that they were X times more likely to use these words than other groups. So, for example, the word that Catholic homilies contained most disproportionately relative to others was homily.
Right.
And that adds up. There also, though, were other perhaps more conceptually surprising words, right? Or if not surprising, at least informative. Words like diocese or Eucharist or parishioner or chalice or holy gospel. These are all words that Catholics were 10 times or more likely relative to others to use during their sermons. Now, the terms that most distinguish evangelical congregations do tend to hover in some ways around sin and punishment. You see words like eternal hell, which is actually the most distinctive word to evangelical congregations. But there are actually differences between groups, not just in the contents of their distinctive terms, but in how common those distinctive terms are. So, for example, I'll take eternal hell, the most distinctively evangelical term. If you sat in an evangelical church in the data set for the whole 8 weeks, you only had a 9% chance of hearing the word eternal hell. By comparison, if you sat in a Catholic congregation for the whole 8 weeks, you had a 37% chance of hearing their most distinctive term, which is, of course, homily, and a 61% chance of hearing the word Eucharist. If you sat back in that same evangelical congregation, you had a 99% chance of hearing the word love. So while evangelical congregations are statistically distinguished by a lot of terms that reference hell and sin and punishment, even those terms are quite rare.
There's also a great section, too, which when you listen, go to the report on page 13, Sermons share common language, but some terms are distinctive, the most common terms in Christian sermons. Take a look at the difference between the evangelical Protestant, Catholic, historic, Black Protestant, mainline Protestant, and you'll be surprised at some of the percentiles that show up. I'll give you a little spoiler alert. Evangelical Protestant, and all the terms are just a perfect score except for one, strangely enough, love. Everything else is 100 and love was 99%. But if you look to the left, to the right of that tally, you're going to see some interesting numbers. We have to wrap up our time here with Dennis Krim from Pew Research Center as we talk about their report, The Digital Pulpit, a nationwide analysis of online sermons. PewResearch.org is their website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. What do you hope people will take away from this report, The Digital Pulpit?
Well, our audience, you know, includes both churchgoers and non-churchgoers, and of course, among churchgoers, a wide diversity of them. And we hope that each would take away a bit more about the other, right? That you know, attendees at a Catholic or evangelical church might understand more about life at a mainline or historically Black Protestant church, and that Americans who spend their Sundays or Saturdays elsewhere might understand a bit more about what life is like in the pews for those that do attend. You know, we hope that people might understand a bit more about the experiences of others.
Which is part of the lesson that all the churches in the Christian and really all the churches do teach about unity, understanding, and association. And that's really the root of the teaching. You get a little more of the mechanics, though, through this report, The Digital Pulpit, a nationwide analysis of online sermons. Read it yourself at pewresearch.org, and it is going to be a very insightful and interesting read when you do indeed do that. We've been talking with the lead researcher with the Pew Research Center, Dennis Quinn. Dennis, thanks from what you said earlier, is the start of what's going to be a fascinating exploration of this element of faith in our country, and thanks for being here today.
Hey, thanks for letting me join.